Welcome to the WRTI Performance Studio. I'm Susan Lewis. I'm here with Miltos Yeralamu, who is playing Puck in Opera Philadelphia's production of Benjamin Britten's A Midsummer Night's Dream. Welcome to WRTI.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, you've come here from England, and you still have a little jet lag, I understand.
I certainly do. I'm still waking up at 4 a.m. in the morning, yeah.
And what role were you coming from? What was the last thing you did in England?
The last thing was I just did an episode on the new season of The Crown, season 3, which was a fantastic experience because I love that show anyway.
Oh, I love that show
always,
too.
It's always great to kind of do things that you watch and you go, oh, great, I get to do a little something on that.
Well, you have such an interesting life because you've had so many different roles.
I feel very lucky because I don't feel I've had a normal acting career. I feel like I've done, I mean, I'm doing an opera. I'm not even an opera singer. How'd that happen?
Well, this happened, you go back a long time with this opera, though.
Yeah, I do, yeah. When I first started acting, I was offered an audition for the English National Opera, and it was the second time they'd created this production, Robert Carson's production of A Midsummer Night's Dream in Aix-en-Provence at the festival. And it was a huge success. You have to remember that back in the time when it was created, it was one of only a handful of opera productions that had decided to break the confines of how people experienced opera. For so long, it was all about just the singers. It wasn't necessarily about the acting. The context, the design, all of that was created, and then the singers came in, sometimes with very little rehearsal and just, you know, did their repertoire, you know. And Robert completely exploded that and got actors to throw themselves around, to do the things that most opera singers were saying, I can't possibly do that. I can't possibly have a fight with someone or get on someone's back or throw them across the stage and sing at the same time. But Robert managed to get an amazing cast of young, athletic actors. And he kind of broke the mold. And I think that is the reason why it's still being revived to this day.
And so Puck was your introduction to opera.
Yeah, I'd never been to an opera. I wouldn't consider myself particularly musical. And so when I got the audition, I immediately said, no, I'm just going to humiliate myself. I'm not going. Don't ask me again. You know, that's it. But she was persistent, and I credit her for being persistent, because in the end, I realised that the person that I was going to be understudying, oh, because the audition wasn't for the role, it was just to understudy the role. It was an actor called Emil Wolk, who ended up being my mentor and second father because he took me under his wing. And we found a great affinity. And I would still say that he taught me pretty much everything I know when it comes to being a performer, especially on stage. And I worked with him a lot after that. But the interesting thing about this is that despite not wanting to go to the audition and despite eventually going and getting the job, I turned up, they'd already been rehearsing, they were getting into just doing runs of the rehearsal, and I remember sitting there and watching Emil do this amazing leap. The stage is this huge kind of bed, and it's on a rake, and at the very apex at the back of the stage, there's a moment where Puck runs off as if he's flying off into the night. And of course, I'm not going to say what happened, but whatever happened, he really injured himself. He really injured the small of his back. And he couldn't do the very first show, so I had to do it. And I didn't know the show. So I spent a weekend with, I think they were just about to open the next week. I do remember, I mean, it's a long time ago, but yes. I do remember that we didn't have a lot of time to rehearse. And I remember that weekend being with Robert Carson in his apartment in West London with a CD of the recording of Midsummer Night's Dream and rehearsing it in his front room. And that was how I learnt the part, barely. And I went on and did the very first show. I think I cried pretty much throughout the whole performance because I was so overwhelmed by everything. I mean, I got through the performance, but it was tough. But I did it, you know. Nothing fell apart. The production, the run happened. I wouldn't say whether I was good or bad, but I definitely didn't make the show stop. And that was a real steep learning curve. And from that moment on, I didn't do the show for a while after that because Emil was doing it. But once he retired, and we revived it in Aix-en-Provence a few years ago, I've been doing the revival since. Yeah.
Wow. Well, so you started out earlier in your career learning Puck in Midsummer Night's Dream, and you also were playing Shakespeare on stage, and then you got into film and TV, and you've played a variety of roles in film and TV, most notably recently in Game of Thrones as the Swordmaster. What kind of special training did you need for that?
So I've always been, I wasn't very academic at school. I struggled at school and didn't really have a very good time. But the one thing I knew that I could do, and the one thing that connected me to school, because I did feel quite, you know, like I felt like I was completely out of my depth at school, was that when I found doing school productions, it was one thing I really found inspiration in. And I was lucky enough because the school that I went to, and we're talking secondary school, you know, between 11 and 16, we had a fantastic English teacher who would do productions, you know, and I found a way of being involved in school, and it made me enjoy it much more. And I was very lucky to have someone like that kind of inspire me. But I was always very physical as an actor. I love dancing. I have a natural aptitude to pick up choreography, which makes it really easy. I remember the very first thing I did, I think I was 9 years old, and it was called the Clockwork Policeman, and all I had to do was be a clockwork policeman.
What is so a clockwork policeman?
Well, you do a bit of robotics, a bit of body popping, you know, that kind of thing. I was 9 years old, and I was kind of in my element. And so I've always been fascinated by movement. I've always been interested in theatre that's visual. I mean, it's all physical, it's all visual. You can't really separate it. I find using the term a physical performer problematic because all performers should be physical. It's not, otherwise we're doing radio, aren't we? So I connected with that. I started to pursue it. I would do it, you know, I found amateur dramatic societies that I would work with. And then I went and studied it. And I was very lucky when I went to university, I worked with fantastic choreographers. Even though I was doing a drama course, it was very holistic in the sense that we did music and drama and performance, dance, should I say. So I was very lucky. I got exposed to choreographers, fantastic choreographers. And I kind of learnt my craft that way. So everything was based on how do you physically represent. So I was very good at kind of doing animal studies and all of those things that you do at, you know, drama school. And that being able to work on movement choreography, working on stage combat, was just a natural progression. Because it's just about how do you process the information you'll get given and how do you manage to do it in, you know, and make it look natural. You know, some people are good at it, some people less good at it. It's just the way that we process information. And so I had an aptitude for that. And so when it came to doing Shakespeare, I was lucky enough to do things like play parts like Mercutio, you know, getting the chance to show off, you know, stage fighting and all of that kind of stuff, which I used to love. I think I've always enjoyed that. I wasn't very sporty, but you know, get me to choreograph a fight with someone, I could do that, you know.
Wow.
So when I was asked to for the casting for Cyrio Farrell, they did ask me at the audition, they said, do you have sword fighting experience? And for the very first time in probably any actor's career, you could say that there was something on your CV, because all actors have got, I can horse ride and I can do stage combat. I think it's that's a given that everyone puts on their CV. But for me, it was true. I actually could do it. And I think I even took I was leaving the house and I walked past some shrubbery, and there was a little cane, you know, it was kind of for a plant, yes, to grow up against. And I just pulled it out and I took it to the audition with me. I don't know what I was thinking. If I'd thought about it longer, I would have said to myself, that's a stupid idea, do not do that. But I did take it. And so when my casting was to do the very first lesson with Arya. And so I did it with this little cane in my hand. So they could tell I had a natural, I could kind of, you know.
Wow, that's great.
Use it, let's say that. And it really helped, because the thing with filming is that you just don't have time to work on that kind of rehearsal. So they needed someone who could pick it up quickly. Maisie Williams, who plays Arya Stark, she also did dance at school. She was at school at the time, 13 years old. She was a street dancer, you know. So she could pick it up. And the thing that we're both very proud of is that we never used our stunt doubles, that everything you see of us doing our fights, our lessons, is us. So that made us very proud. We made a pact that we were going to do it, and we really worked hard on it.
Well, and there's this great clip on YouTube of you teaching her, and there's one moment where you take the sword and it flips up. I don't think it would work here.
Well, these are too soft. this is what we're doing. So the whole thing is that there's a line in it where they say, and I do flip the sword and I catch it on the back of my hand. Now, what no one really knows, although I have mentioned it in interviews before, is that I hadn't planned to do that. I knew I wanted to do it, but I hadn't rehearsed it. But before we shot the scene, I was thinking about it. I said, it would be so great if I can kind of flip the sword and catch it. Now, these swords are heavy. I think it made it easier, to be fair. But I remember doing it. So we were filming it, you know, we were shooting the scene, and I just went, I'm going to just try it. And I just flipped it over, and I caught it on the back of my hand. And out of the corner of my eye, I could see everyone kind of start to go, what was that? What was that? He hasn't done that before. And I could tell him, was like really, I mean, the stunt coordinator was like, I haven't seen him do that before. And even I was surprised by it. I almost laughed at myself at being able to do it. But luckily, we caught it. I think I only did it once, but they caught that moment. And so, you know, that was a very special moment, and it was very much spur of the moment.
Wow. And I love the way sword fighting is likened to dancing. And talk a little bit about the water dance.
So I have this theory. I did speak to George R. R. Martin about this. And the whole point is that... if anyone has seen the show, is that at the time in the show, Eddard Stark, Sean Bean's character, has taken his family to King's Landing. He knows it's very dangerous. His younger daughter wants to learn how to fight. He doesn't think it's such a good idea, but she insists on it, and so he thinks, okay, the only way we're going to get away with my daughter, remember, he's the hand of the king, already in a very dangerous situation because of what's going on in King's Landing. He can't say my daughter's going to sword fighting classes, so he says she's going to dancing classes. And so the reason why I'm called the dancing master is because we're not allowed to know really what she's going to. So they say it's a dancing master. Now, the reality, of course, is that the Bravosi style of fighting, he calls the water dance, because it's all about flow it's kind of more like Tai Chi. It's much more like an Eastern martial art in the way that they approach sword fighting. It is like a dance, unlike what the hairy bearded guys in Westeros do, which is very heavy swords, hacking and slashing. It's a very different style. So what he teaches Arya is a much more finessed approach to fighting, much more like a martial art, much more like fencing even. But and we had to find what that style was, because although the idea of it was described, we had to create that vocabulary ourselves.
Well, there's something thrilling about watching sword fighting, and it's the way watching sports are thrilling, but there's something about sword fighting that engages us emotionally too.
Because it's dangerous.
I know.
the thing is that of course throughout history, I mean, I do workshops, and when I do conventions, I love to run classes where I invite people to come and do a class with me, and I kind of share. Oh, it's 20 people in a room. I pair them up and I teach them how to choreograph their own fights based on the way I've approached it in the work that I've done. And for me, it's always been about how you find where the reality is. Because we're used to Errol Flynn and swashbuckling and amazing choreographed fights, but they're not necessarily authentic in the sense that what you really need to understand is that if you were going to be in a duel, the duels would be very, very short. They'd last very, very little time, because the whole point is that the first blow that you make, you want that to make that count. So it has to be the last blow, if you know what I mean. It's like,
yes,
that only blow is going to kill you, because the longer a fight would go on, the more likelihood you'd both cut yourself, because swinging very sharp metal around is very dangerous. And I don't think you quite get that, or you haven't had that before. But Game of Thrones was very much about, this is the brutality of war. This is what it's like. You know, you have knights who have honour, and then you have mercenaries who just live by their wits. And usually they're the ones who survive. The knights are all dead.
Wow.
The ones who have survived are people like Bronn and, you know, those guys who just, whatever it takes to take down my opponent, that's what I'm going to do. It's not going to be honourable. It's not going to be beautiful. It's not going to be elegant. It's just going to be about life and death. And that's really the key, is that it's dangerous and it should feel dangerous. And I think that's why we have an emotional connection to it.
And so your character in Game of Thrones is a teacher inhabited in a very physical way, and you're also nurturing to this student. And interestingly, then now you're playing Puck in Midsummer Night's Dream, and Puck is a very physical role too, but there's also this kind of emotional element to it. Talk about Puck a little bit.
So Puck is, his presence is always connected to Oberon. In our production, you see, the very first thing you see is these fairies coming on stage and singing, and they're, you know, our choir is like from the age of 8 to 15, you know, these little beautiful butlers with moustaches, green moustaches, and all dressed immaculately with slick down hair. And then you meet Puck, who used to be like them. And he's gone to seed, and he's kind of lost his mojo, and he's obviously doesn't look like them. His clothes don't fit anymore, he's outgrown them. And hence this huge moustache that I have, which is going to probably be painted green. And what you understand is that this is a guy who is desperate to keep his job as Oberon's right-hand man. And so when you get into that situation, you're always trying too hard. And I think that effort to always please means that sometimes he's not always very successful in pleasing, because he's trying too hard. And so my relationship with Oberon is very unpredictable, because he's unpredictable. You know, one minute he can be incredibly sensual and caring towards Puck, and other times he's going to kill him. Because he's the element of all life. Between Oberon and Titania, they can change the climate just through an argument. So this is the world we're living in when we're watching this production, that literally their argument is changing the seasons. And so his ability, like if you think about how capricious and unpredictable the Greek gods of Greek mythology were, that's the same kind of thing. One minute they can be your best friend, the next minute they're your worst enemy. And so that tension between me and Oberon is always the thing that I'm playing. It's always like, I don't know if this is the right thing, but I think it is. Of course he gets carried away because he's delirious with the game that he's being asked to participate in. And that is really the essence. It's the push and pull of that relationship is really the heart of where Puck lives in this production.
Well, it's such a great play, and it's a great opera. And I understand, and Britain stuck pretty much to the original Shakespeare.
I think he even made some improvements. be honest.
Puck is a non-speaking role in an opera, but you speak in
it's
accordance
musical.
With the music.
It's
so
it's musical,
you may
no
not
doubt.
Be using your vocal cords in the same way, but you're actually phrasing and
that's the thing, the hardest thing that I've had to learn, and also my greatest challenge, because even though I've done this production quite a few times now, the conductors are always different, and every conductor will try to finesse an element of Puck's musicality. Sometimes they give you more freedom, sometimes they're very strict, but that has been the thing that I've enjoyed. It's the hardest thing for me, because I wouldn't consider myself to be naturally very musical, but I always like it. I don't know if I like it, but I'm always much happier when I'm doing a job that is challenging me. You know, it's kind of a perverse thing to say that I only like it when I'm outside my comfort zone. But truthfully, it's kind of what I need as a performer. I need something really to focus on. And so my most informative experiences of doing this production is working with conductors who are always asking me for something just a little bit different. It means that I feel that my performance always comes quite fresh.
And you were talking about being in the moment. Is it different being the only speaking part when everyone around you is singing, in terms of how you relate and how the characters develop?
It's a really good question, that. I think there's two things that are going on. On the one hand, the musicality means that there is structure. I can't just be completely free to say my lines as I wish to say them. There's rhythm and there is cadence, and all of those things are happening. And you're working with the conductor and with the orchestra and with every single other person who's singing. And when I first did this production, it was the hardest thing for me to get my head around. The hardest thing. But it's the thing that I feel that I've learned over 20 years of doing it. That was the one thing. It took 20 years, but I think I'm finally understanding it now. But at the same time, my role, and the way that Robert Carson wanted the role to kind of live in the production, was that he's always slightly undercutting and subverting and challenging an audience's perception of what they're watching. So, for example, maybe it's not so novel anymore, but there are times when I'll be in the orchestra pit, or I'll be in the audience, or I will always be subverting the audience's expectations of what is going to happen. And I think that that tension means that it's always surprising. You don't really know what you're going to get when Puck is going to come on stage next. And so he lives slightly on the edge between being connected to the audience and connected to the events on stage. He's like the conduit, the medium, and it kind of allows the audience to experience the opera in a different way, makes it kind of unpredictable. And I think that's what is a great success for this production, is that you're always going to be surprised by it. And that's not just me that does that. Definitely the mechanicals do that too. And when it comes to the play at the end, you'll see how that's... I mean, Benjamin Britten did that in the music, the pastiches. And,
yes.
You know, that is what is so joyous about that play within the play, musically. And sometimes I think it's even better than when you see it in the straight play. Because something about the music that adds an added element of humour to the play.
Well, it's such a wonderful play, and so many lines have become very famous because Puck sort of moves the play along, because it's his casting a spell on the wrong person to make him fall in love with the wrong woman, and them all working through the woods.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really wonderfully wonderful fun.
I love it. I'm so proud to be part of this production, because as an actor, you just don't get these kind of experiences to work in an environment like the opera. And for me, it's just, I find it incredibly exciting. And this is someone who thought when he was a teenager that I'm not interested in opera. It's like, you know, something that other people go and do. But you know, I really love the art. And I'm sure, you know, young people coming to this opera, it's a great introduction. If you haven't seen opera before, this will surprise you, because it surprised me when I watched that run before Emil injured himself. You know, I was like, this is amazing.
Do you still do that dive?
Yeah, I do. And every time I do it, I always think of Emil. there are ways of, I mean, you've got to be fit to do this. And the trouble is, I don't do it enough. So, you know, you have to kind of build up your stamina to do it. But it's, you know, there are times when I, especially the end of Act Two, where, you know, if there was some oxygen at hand, that's what I would be using. It's tough, but it's great.
And people will recognize lines they didn't realize they knew, like, Lord, what fools these mortals be.
Yeah, yeah.
And you have a great monologue at the end, too. Yeah. You have the last word.
Yeah, yeah. If we shadows have offended. Yeah, it's a brilliant epilogue.
Great.
And we do something special in it as well, which is a surprise, too.
Wow. Well, we look forward to the opera. So great to have you in Philadelphia.
It's my pleasure. I'm looking forward to getting to know it.